This is a Decentered podcast from Rob Watson. Conversations about community media. Look out for Decentered Media on Twitter and on iTunes, or go to decentered.co.uk. Hello, it's Saturday the 13th of December. It's February. Why did I say December?
Wishing the year away, Rob.
In my befuddled state, I have no idea how that time is passing. Anyway, it's we're celebrating the 100th episode of the Decentered Media podcast today, and we're doing it as part of World Radio Day. And I'm joined today with John Costa at the Dot Media Centre, who's hosting today's event. And we're also joined, we have been joined through the day for a series of discussions by different guests and friends, old friends, new friends. It's a really great way of meeting people in lockdown. For this session, I'm joined by, let me make sure I get this correct. We're joined by Dr. Kate Baker from University of Exeter and Agile Rabbit. And we'll get Kate to explain what that means in a moment, and by Vanessa Boone from Derby Sound. Now, Vanessa, we've not met before, so this is an experience for us to get to know each other and to find out more about each other. So I'm looking forward to kind of finding out what it is you do and how you do it. Now, the connection I've got with Kate is that we've worked on a project through University of Bath to talk about engagement, public engagement by universities, and how community radio can facilitate and support that. Before we get on to that, Kate, do you want to tell us a bit about your background and the work you do for Agile Rabbit and how that came about and what it involves?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, thanks so much for having me on. This is very exciting for a Saturday. So I'm a research fellow in the Centre for Water Systems at the University of Exeter, and I'm a geographer by training. And at the end of my PhD, so my PhD was looking at bugs in rivers, which I really enjoyed. It was a great project, but I really missed people when I was doing my project. And I kind of saw this disconnect between my research and, the research managers and the public. And so when I was looking for a postdoc or the next step after my PhD, I really wanted something that would help me bridge those gaps. Hi, Premal.
Hi, okay.
We're live, Premal, so we've just dropped you in. So just let you know that we're going out on YouTube and we're recording as well. So
this is great. Kate's
just starting off by telling us about, we'll revisit introductions again in a few minutes, but we're just finding out more about Agile Rabbit and Kate's work in that area.
Yeah, so then I work with water engineers, and I essentially do everything but engineering. And I support the interaction with industry, so with water companies, environment agency, to make sure that the research is co-created. And engineers do a fantastic job at that. A lot of the engineers are looking at water systems and distribution systems, and it would be totally mad for them to be doing that on their own. So it's very much co-created with water companies. When I moved to Exeter, I met artist John Packey. He was doing a bit of work at the university at the time. And we had a conversation about how there were so many amazing things going on at the University of Exeter. The university is fantastic. It just covers every single topic that you can imagine. There are researchers that are working on it. And we just saw an opportunity of starting some talks at the Phoenix, Exeter Phoenix, which is an art centre in the centre of Exeter. So we just started putting on these monthly talks, and they were really popular. They were selling out the workshop room, which seats about 50 people, and then we're offered the bigger room, the auditorium, which seats 270 people. We're putting on panel discussions. And then COVID sort of hit, and we had to try and be a little bit creative of how can we carry on doing public engagement events. And so we did the classic Zoom. I think everyone's enjoyed a little bit of Zoom, as we are now, and it is amazing. I know people talk about being Zoomed out, but this is quite incredible how we're all sitting in different parts of the UK having a conversation. But when we were part of the Futures 2020 online festival last year, we were thinking about ways we can do online events that are something that's not Zoom. And community radio was a kind of an idea. And I know Alice Armstrong, who's a radio producer from Stellaria Media. I went to uni with Alice and lived with her during my third year. So I rang up Alice and said, oh, this community radio, can you tell me a little bit about this? Because I think that, you know, we might have some budget to put on some shows. And so that's how it kind of started.
That's really interesting, because that's almost, if you're looking at you being zoomed out, you'd be looking for another form of technology that is new and innovative and engaging people to do that. Whereas in fact, something like community radio is almost going back to something that's quite traditional, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think what also, it's been a really good experience, because we've only been running Agile Rabbit for a couple of years. And until we started doing the community radio stuff, it was more one way. We'd put on a talk or a panel discussion. And although whenever we put on the events in person, we always try and create a very relaxed atmosphere. And we usually get a speaker to talk for sort of 15, 20 minutes. So the rest of the hour can be for discussion. And we do try and make it feel like, you know, you're having a chat. But we are coming up with the ideas of what the event will be. And doing this community radio has just made me think of different ways of doing engagement. And the way we did it is that the community radio stations across the Southwest, and we approached the radio stations and asked them, what are you interested in? What would you like to put a show, you know, what show would you like to put on? And this is when it was great to be part of Futures, because the Futures Festival is a EU funded festival that links Bath, Bristol, Bristol University, Exeter and Plymouth. So it didn't matter what topic people came up with. We knew that we'd be able to, you know, find those researchers. And it did really vary. It varied from feminism to climate change to, you know, how's everyone coping with COVID and mental health issues. So yeah, it's really pushed me and my methods. It's been a great experience.
So let's bring Vanessa in at this point. Can you tell us what it is you do, what your background is, and what Derby Sound is about and where it's come from?
Yeah, sure. Derby Sound Community Radio is a volunteer-run online station. So like many community radio stations, I'm sure, around the world, we've been resourceful, running on a shoestring budget, lots of volunteer goodwill and support. We're very resourceful. And I think that has helped us all in these challenging times, because we're used to having to operate on a shoestring and you know, find solutions to challenges. And it's really great hearing about your work, Kate, because I think public engagement is at the heart of what we do. We're part of a charity called Disability Direct. So accessibility and participation those are really important values for us. And although radio is the vehicle, I feel we're very much a community project. So some community projects use arts and crafts, some use sports to engage people, to empower people and to improve wellbeing. We use radio. So we train people up in radio skills who've never had a chance to do radio, as well as those who are, you know, lifelong enthusiasts. We've run Women Amplified courses to get more women on the airways. We've done courses. We're doing a great thing during lockdown. Every other Tuesday, we have the Express You Youth Radio Project. So we're getting kids online on a Zoom like we are right now. And we're teaching them radio skills and we're recording over Zoom, and they're taking over the airways during lockdown, which has been delightful and loads of fun for the kids, but a lot of giggles for us as well. And it's really about that, you know, radio made by the community for and about the community. So it's public engagement at every level.
I thought it was really interesting, Vanessa, you said just before we came on air as well about you had this very proactive access program for getting people with a range of different abilities and disabilities on air. And actually, you found that you were almost like ready and prepared for the restrictions and lockdown of COVID, because your presenters were able to already be able to continue to broadcast. So that was quite an interesting point, actually.
Yeah, it was interesting for us to notice how the big, you know, well-resourced corporate-owned radio stations and even BBC stations were sort of struggling to quickly adapt and buy new software so their presenters could, you know, make shows from home during isolation and social distancing. Whereas we in community radio, as grassroots project with disabled access, is a really important value. Knew that not everyone can get to a studio to make a show anyway. So we had always had online and remote options for our volunteers to participate. So yeah, it was really interesting that we were working in that way, and obviously hadn't anticipated a situation like this pandemic, but we were in a good position. And it begs the question, why are those large, well-funded, big organisations, when there is an Equality Act that so they should be making adjustments to ensure participation of disabled people, why weren't they doing it already? So I think it asks useful questions.
I think that's a useful research question for Kate. Maybe she'll be able to point people in the right direction of how to go about answering that, because I think that's a very valid point. So, yeah.
Let's just bring in Prima for a minute, because Prima, you're coming at this from a slightly different angle. You're a programme maker. I mean, everybody's a programme maker and a practitioner or an academic. It's a combination of them. But we've got to know each other through your programme making work. Can you just tell us what kind of programme you do and how you shape it and what the experience has been like for you at Phonak FM, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. Thanks, Rob. And thanks for inviting me onto this. This is just really fascinating. I'm not, I was never really a kind of a radio maker or program maker. I think I've always been interested in music and sound and probably just interested, you know, in terms of radio and how it kind of creates this kind of world really that we're all kind of engaged in. And so I moved from London to Exeter about 5-6 years ago, and at the time I was kind of missing the kind of diversity within the communities I'd come from. So I was brought up in the Midlands and lived in London pretty much all my life, so the move was, you know, really incredible. But it also kind of showed me that there was kind of a lack of diversity in the different communities, especially sort of Black Afro-Caribbean, Black British and South Asian communities. And what I wanted to do really was just create a show, because I love music so much, that reflected those communities. I mean, just to say, I love every kind of, well, pretty much all kinds of music, and have always done so. But I kind of felt I needed to kind of focus on sort of how South Asian music and artists of, you know, from that heritage. And so, yeah, I just wrote to Phonak and said, look, this is kind of strange that there isn't anything like this. Why isn't there anything like this? And we should have a show. And they were like, as you know, Phonak have been throughout, just incredible. And just, well, do you want to come and do it? And that opportunity has, you know, opened up so much. And it was wonderful, really, because I then looked into my culture a bit more in terms of music. I kind of tried to move the show into different areas. So it was really not just looking at what people might consider the kind of classic mainstream sounds of the culture, which are Bollywood and Bhangra music, which are fantastic. But, you know, I think a lot of people probably don't know some of the other things that are going on. So I wanted to delve a lot deeper and kind of into more of a richer kind of stream of music. So I kind of looked at, you know, the classical sound from where the kind of contemporary music comes from. And Phonak has been just fabulous in allowing me to, you know, have that space. And it's been great for me because I've kind of learnt a lot about music, but it's also, you know, allowed me to showcase quite a lot of, you know, wonderful, beautiful music really, which just kind of varies from R&B to very old traditional Hindustani classical. But in a way, it's kind of hopefully engaging the community to learn about the culture, that it's not just one thing. So, yes, I don't know if I answered your question. But
no, yeah. Really, really, really eloquently.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Kate, I'm going to kind of work around, but anytime you feel like jumping in, just jump in. Kate, the idea of public engagement, because you've kind of done this from both sides in a way. You've kind of been thinking about and helping to support and manage what public engagement is from an organisational point of view, but also from, you know, facilitating a community activity, a community forum point of view. Just what's the standard model for public engagement, and why is Agile Rabbit different from that, and what benefits does it bring in terms of, and what have you learned about community radio as part of that mix, that new mix?
Yeah, sure. So public engagement, I'd say it's on a bit of a spectrum, and I think depending on who you talk to, they'll give a different answer. So you've got the kind of communication on one side, where, you know, the researcher will tell someone about their work, and it's very kind of one way. So you'd have a classic, you know, a talk, or the expert comes in and sits at the front and asks all the questions. And then on the other side, you've got what would be called in a university engaged research, which is very much this co-created research. So researchers would have a really strong relationship with a community or industry, and it would be an ongoing kind of partnership. And there'd be frequent, you know, interactions and conversations, and the research is very much made with that community. And depending on where you are in the university and who you are, you will give a different definition of what you think public engagement is. And what's kind of fascinating is, so my background's geography, but my PhD supervisor, one was an ecologist, and the other was a geomorphologist. And going from physical geography with those with their backgrounds, and then going to engineering, you realize how, you know, you have one word, but it just means totally different things. So in terms of what it is, it depends on the person. And also, it kind of depends on the research as well. There's some bits of research that work really well to do this kind of co-created stuff. And as I was saying earlier, the engineers that I work with, you know, they're looking at the resilience of water systems. It would be totally crazy for them not to be working with, you know, water companies and communities. But then when you've got a bit more sort of maybe abstract research, you know, theoretical physics, then you kind of got to, you know, think a little bit deeper about how that is going to be engaged with communities. So it's definitely on a bit of a spectrum. And in terms of researchers doing public engagement, the willingness for doing public engagement and the value of it also varies depending on who you talk to. I think it's quite easy to sort of be a bit negative and blame academics, like they're just not interested, and kind of eye roll. But really, researchers, they are under a huge amount of pressure, and the workload, I feel, has really increased over the years. You know, you're meant to be the best teacher. You're meant to be pulling in huge amounts of money. You're meant to be publishing in world leading journals. You're then meant to be doing public engagement. You're then meant to be a good colleague and help with all the admin stuff. And if it's a 9-to-5 job, it's just impossible to do all those things. And so that's how Agile Rabbit kind of started, because I was having all these conversations with, you know, researchers throughout the uni, and I'm quite a curious person anyway. I'm kind of get interested in pretty much anything. And so it's just a real joy to be able to support those researchers in doing kind of public engagement. So at the moment we kind of started with Agile Rabbit more on the kind of communication side, you know, been putting on talks and panel discussions. And using community radio, it's been brilliant because it's helped us like move along a little bit. It's like, oh yeah, you can actually ask communities what they're interested in. So it's been a really great experience. And beginning of this year, me and John sat down thinking about, okay, what do we want to do this next year? And we're trying to think, you know, how we can be creative and make sure communities are very much involved in the process, not just in the kind of output.
Vanessa, the same question, really. What's your experience of public engagement? And because the work that you do, working with, I tell us again, because I haven't got the links in front of me, but you do a whole range of projects. The links are up on the website and the blog posts, but you do a whole range of different projects. So that means that you're working with people in the civic, social sector, the public sector. What's that process of, I call it like translation issues. As John said, we're talking different languages, and Kate said that one word can mean one thing in one context, but we put it in another context. Mm-hmm. How do you cope with that process?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. We have a range of projects, and it's lovely today to be amongst everyone here talking about inclusion and diversity, because for us that was the main reason in starting Derby Sound Community Radio, was to fill the gap, because hospital radio had been closed down in our area, student radio wasn't very active, there just weren't many places, and BBC Radio wasn't doing enough to make sure that all of our communities are represented on the airways. We thought, well, we can complain about the media, or we can create our own and do it better. So we work hard at trying, but we're never complacent. But yeah, trying to take radio out to people who've never done radio before, it's a really interesting public engagement challenge. But what's been great is, and I think working with kids is a great way of testing out how good you are at it, because we've got ages 6 to 18 years on various, we've got three different age groups that we do a regular youth radio session online with at the moment. And I think, you know, if it works with kids and they have fun with it, I think actually it's a really good approach to think about what would be engaging to, I think, unleash the inner child in adults when we go out to all the different communities we work with. So we've done initiatives like Women Amplified, or we trained up 20 women who'd largely not done any radio before at all. And we did a 6-week sort of taster course. And that space was so powerful, because there were no men there to run the mixer desk and, you know, drive the desk, which so often happens. And in fact, an interesting thing about widening participation is Derby Sound was born. It wasn't really my intention to run a community radio station, as others have said, it sort of just happened. But it happened because I got involved initially behind the scenes in another radio project. But one day when I was just trying out a few skills on the mic in the studio, two men who were in a room said, "Oh, women seem to be fine for making a tea, taking the minutes and doing the road shows, but seem to freeze up at the microphone and don't know how to run a radio station." At that point, I knew, okay, I'm really busy, but I now need to find time to learn how to run a radio station. So the whole project is really my bloody mindedness snowballing way out of control. So it's really mushroomed. So we now have 50 volunteers. We have diverse shows, we have Afrobeat shows, we have Asian music, we have Latin music, we've got synth and heavy metal specialist shows, we've got a great folk scene in Derby, we've got a great hip-hop scene. So these are all represented on the hours, but we always want to do more. And I think in terms of ways to engage, I think it helps that we are not having to translate, as with Kate's project, between an academic bubble, which can sometimes feel a bit detached from community. We are grassroots led. And I think in a way that makes it a bit easier, that we're not speaking in jargon and that we're not radio specialists as such, but enthusiasts about community and empowering our community.
I can sense John is like nodding vigorously here, but I'm going to hold him back for a second because I want to ask Primal a question, and this is actually something that needs seriously considered, but doesn't get to it. There's a lot of focus and attention on providing the space, rightly, for women in community radio. But what we don't do is we don't explore what men and masculinity means in terms of radio, because you're absolutely right. It's often that model of people thinking that they know best and they take over. But the conversations I've had with Primal elsewhere are that you operate on a very different, a much more, I have to choose my words carefully because I'm not sure about how I can phrase this, more sensitive kind of approach, a more exploratory, more, if I say feminine kind of approach, it will like get me in trouble with everybody. But do you get a sense of what I'm trying to say? You kind of, the ego gets parked, I hope. I don't know you well enough, I'm presuming. Other people might, the Twitter sphere might light up and say, "Oh no, this guy's terrible, I don't know." but how do you in your program making, kind of you're engaging with people and to make that an inclusive process?
I know what you mean, Rob. I think I'm kind of with you, but I think, yeah, no, absolutely. I think for me, I think one of the things we're trying to do, the show with Alice and this whole kind of process, has been really about kind of inclusion in a way. And I think I've always been around that. So in my other world, my kind of day job has always been working with people, and at the moment I work with volunteers, and it's always been engaging with people in different communities. And I think it kind of, you know, you could take it all the way back, and I don't want to go kind of, but at the same time, you know, my experiences of my parents who came to this country in the 60s has probably sort of given me something which is probably allowed me to be a bit more sensitive to different people and communities, and obviously, you know, different identities. So in a sense, if you're asking me whether I'm, you know, I'm a bit more kind of sensitive in the way I do it, it's not because I'm, you know, it's just because maybe that's just a natural thing that I've kind of learned over time, because I know how people have felt. And obviously I'm very close in another way to my family, and, you know, I've got two daughters. So there's another kind of element where I'm kind of trying not to be the man, if you like, but at the same time, you know, there's always that comes in on some level. But I think for me, going into that a bit deeper, music is the connection. And so I, you know, the work I do is about, and actually quite weirdly, the work I do is I'm, you know, at the moment working on a project for my work in terms of exploring, you know, how best we can kind of engage with more ethnically diverse communities, especially in terms of volunteering. But the music for this, in terms of phonic, it was always about the music. I always thought I could do a talk show, I could do all of that, but that's not me in this space. The space that I kind of love is music, and music is going to talk for itself here. And so I use music as a way of connecting. And interestingly, I mean, you know, I'm kind of hit and miss with tech. I can kind of do it and I can't. But the thing is, I do love is music, and it's the sound, and it doesn't matter who it's coming from. So I do, and I've kind of realised that I'm actually promoting the women musicians more on my show, because I think there is a huge kind of area which isn't explored, and lots of South Asian women as well producing some absolutely incredible music right now, from punk to hip hop to, you know, to folk. So that was really interesting. And so engaging on that level has really kind of helped, because what it's done is allowed me to explore kind of my culture, but it's also allowed other people to do that. So, yeah, I suppose if you're asking it in terms of a kind of masculine kind of side, it doesn't really come into play for me in a way, if that makes sense. It's always been in terms of the music. I mean, obviously my work is different because that's, but in terms of the show and the music and this thing, you know, it's always been about the music. And if something's good and it's really powerful, but I am very conscious as well. I do it consciously, if that makes, you know, sense, where I think, actually, hold on a minute, this isn't quite right. Or I, you know, if I'm playing some music from somebody, I really kind of want to make sure that they're, politics isn't suspect, if that makes sense as well. So sometimes I think, oh no, I've just played that, but I don't know what they think about this or that. Maybe I need to find out. So sometimes that also comes into play. And I, you know, so that must mean that they all kind of have to have some sort of level of inclusion in the practice of what they produce as well.
I'm going to bring John in because we've known each other for a long time. So I'm kind of trying to phrase this in a way that sounds spontaneous, but the connection, you know, What's the work that you've done and using your model? Tell us what your model is for engagement through the Doc Media Centre when you do public community education activities.
Yeah, I think over the years we ran Citizen's Eye here in Leicester for 7 years. And I think there was a Citizen's Eye Derby as well, actually. Someone came down and said, that's a really good model, can we franchise it? And I said, no, just have it. And have a different colour logo, and he set up Citizen's Eye Derby. So I think that's always how I've been since day one. It was never about the money. And I think it was all the different events I've seen and put on, festivals, doc film festivals, and they're having our own independent museum and archive and library here. I think you've got to have four types of people, okay? You've got to have open educators. So that's that, and that's anybody that does youth work through to academics. They've got to be open to new ideas coming off campus, realizing there probably isn't a boundary between campus and off campus. You know, the whole of the city's campus, their community's campus. So open educators, issue experts, people with lived experience. You know, whether you've volunteered, it's your first day and you're 1 hour into it and it's a tea break, you've got an hour's worth of experience. And so people being willing to share that knowledge. I call them the engaged public, the ones that have moved beyond the like button on Facebook. You know, they're kind of social activists, they're campaigners. They probably don't realize they're radical, but they're radical because they're interested, as opposed to disinterested because they're immersed in a box set. I haven't got time. And then the last one is open learners or open students, if you like. The fact that the idea really, and I've been encouraged by many researchers and doctors and professors, and including Rob that I know. I've got two dodgy A levels from a long time ago. I run four modules and deputy program leader at DMU, but I haven't got a degree to my name. Lots of industry experience. Is the fact that, you know, what you really aim to be is to be a bit of all four. And if you're a bit of all of those four types of person, you're probably just going to be a bit of a better person when it comes to engaging with communities and talking to people. Thought, you know, I find you can't teach empathy. You know, people care or they don't. So I tend to be a bit like a Bremer was saying, you know, I try and find out a little bit about someone's politics maybe before I let them in. And the great thing about being an independent space is I don't have to let anybody in, because it's not about money. It's more about, do you care? Are you interested? And by having a project like Parallel Lives, which links across the 100 countries of the global south, I normally test people out by how they describe those 100 countries. I tell them they're in South and Central America, Africa, South Asia and Southeast Asia. And someone will go, oh, it's the third world. So I go, okay, you might not get in quite as quick as someone who calls it the majority world or the global south. You know, so as a geographer myself, Kate, geography and geology, I actually Zoom called my geography teacher, Mr. Wilson, yesterday down in London, and I showed him the archive and library upstairs and thanked him, because I said some of his human geography stuff must have stuck in my head. And I've realized, I'm 54, it's taken me this long to realize that actually geography has always been through. I always thought it was history, but it turns out it was in fact geography and caring about people and where people live and how they move and how they connect. So for me, I love conversations about community engagement and public engagement, because it still comes down to my role as a journalist, I think. Again, no formal qualification in that. As a journalist, is the fact that, you know, John walked into the room and the room reacted. What did you say? Well, I said, hi. And everybody reacted back and they went, hi. And we've left the mainstream media to own these words and own the terminology, like youth and young people and stuff. And I think the real value of community media is how we seize the opportunity to network amongst ourselves, but take ownership back of what the message is and make sure not just a cheesy, cliched, you know, giving voice to the voiceless, but actually turning around and saying, well, that person has the ability to be able to do that. You know, I think we're in the role of facilitators and rather than gatekeepers.
I wonder if I could just touch on that theme that seemed to be linking some things that we're all talking about here about inclusion, and the word radical has come up a few times, which is really lovely. And I think remembering the community and pirate radio roots, you know, that amazing history, inspiring history globally of radio as a tool of resistance and counterculture. And we recently had a challenging issue in my local area where our local BBC station had rent-a-gob Katie Hopkins on and gave her airtime to spread her hate. But the example I want to give is what we did instead, knowing that was happening the same week, is we ran Love Music, Hate Racism. And we got local artists involved in kind of putting that slogan out and doing special online gigs and stuff. So it was fun. You know, I think, you know, radical and resistance can be fun. And that's a great way to engage the public through that. And as Prema was saying about the love of music, it brings us together, doesn't it? That shared experience, the local artists singing songs with Love Music, Hate Racism, the same week that Kate Hopkins came to our city on the BBC. For me, that said a lot about what community radio is all about.
Yeah, I mean, it's the platform of choice for a lot of people. I think at the end of the day, a lot of the people this morning who were talking on the live stream were talking about, you know, running community radio stations and what's involved, and we're kind of really heavy into that kind of aspect of it, I think. But we've got to come at it from the point of view what it allows people to have, which for the first time, maybe an element of control of how communities, how people see them. You know, for a lot of our communities, the mainstream media dictates to other people. You know, imagine someone who wouldn't talk to you based on what they've read, watched or seen about you, but they've never met you. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I often say I spent, was it 18 or whatever it was, years in the education system in Britain, learning about all the things that should be important. Then I spent 5 years in the army learning about who I should and shouldn't like. And then I've spent the rest of the next 30 years of my life learning all of that was wrong. You've got to go out and talk to people to actually find out what the world's like. And really, it's like, I think community media allows you to encourage people to go off and find for themselves, because you bring an event together. Now, whether it's people listening to Primal Show to turn around and say, well, actually, this person, they're about to give you some sort of, you know, techno Bhangra mix that they've mashed up in their own bedroom. And someone goes, wow, that's amazing. You know, we're talking about someone who's a talented artist for whatever reason. And then where you're from and all that is actually the reason it's good, is because you've brought that community element to it. You know, your faith, your background, your sexuality, it doesn't matter. And the same with yourself, Vanessa, you know, with people with disabilities, people that are on air, they're listening to the show. They can't see the person. They have no idea what they have, an ability or a disability, whatever it is. They're there because they're listening, engaging with the program.
It's a bit of a cart before the horse or horse before the cart question, this, in terms of platforms that we're on. So, Vanessa, Derby Sound Community Radio isn't broadcast. It's on the web. Is that correct?
Yeah, online, which I think is quite empowering with slightly less restrictions.
And Agile Rabbit is an event-based, and it's now online. And Prima, what's the folk? What's been the benefit in the lockdown of broadcasting as in addition to all the online resources that you were now all exploring? You know, people talk about community media on the basis of access. You can't have community media without access to the resources and the platforms of distribution. That's an essential part of it. But now we've got so many different types of access to different things. What are you picking up from that? What are we learning from those different modes of access?
It's been quite interesting. I think I was really fortunate because I was involved with another community radio station in Devon called Tiverton Community Radio Station, who helped set up my kind of online studio, if you like, which is pretty basic, but it worked and helped me sort of get myself set up. I think a lot of people on Phonik struggled with the home setup, and it was difficult because I think for a lot of people, because Phonik also, I mean, it's online, but it also transmits on 106.8 FM in the local area. I think one of the issues was the fact that a lot of people loved the fact of going into the studio, of actually, you know, having that option. And so the online tool, which is now I think a lot more people are using, which I think some of the schedulers have helped kind of set that up for people, has helped them create that. But I think what it also felt for me was that initially when last year lockdown started, I used it as a way of kind of engaging with people to talk about their experiences and feelings. So then I went out to friends and family to ask them what their thoughts were. And then I'd kind of turned it into almost like a spoken word or poetry. And that was great because what it did was, and I think a lot of people found, was that it changed, it kind of gave you a creative side to how you kind of broadcast. So for me, just broadcasting my regular show, which was great, but I wanted to do something different because I wanted to kind of engage with people to hear how they felt about, you know, those initial days of those early, the early lockdown. So for some, it's been positive, I think. I think for others, it's been interesting how they've kind of managed to navigate the kind of, you know, the online tool. But I think overall there's been kind of and that's an issue about inclusion as well and access, but I think overall a lot of the presenters on Phonik have now kind of found their way through this and kind of are now creating their own show. And from home there's almost kind of this feeling, you know, it's a liberation in a sense, you know, but then it's also a struggle at times.
I wonder, you know, we've lived through, to use a phrase of the moment, a moment, and which has been liberating in terms of breaking people away. There is incredible value about meeting up at the studios or at the live venue, but there's also, I mean, not to over egg this, but there's also something about, I helped with Ramadan Radio here last year in Leicester, and one of the successes of this, the broadcast last year, is that it was 50-50% participation, male, female. And that was a huge step forward. And it was vastly appreciated by a lot of people, but because people could do things from home. So Vanessa, that kind of access that you're facilitating, you know, where do we go with this? And, you know, what do you think the next steps should be that we should be looking to embrace about making this work in practice?
Yeah, I think there are some really practical things, and it was touching one of the early discussions today with Lucinda and Marla as well about the need to recognise that different groups of people have different needs to break down different barriers to participation. So, for example, parents and carers, free crush would really help, you know, because actually just the reality of time to, you know, have a quiet space at home to record if the kids are running around and you're trying to make a radio show, or sometimes that adds some interesting kind of enrichment to a show with that's quite relatable, but there's only so much of that you can manage. For our blind presenters, we have JAWS kind of text-to-speech software, Browse Loud software. So I think some of the technical solutions are quite easy to do, but again, it's surprising when you look at the makeup of BBC stations and commercial stations, how little representation there is of all the communities we're talking about today. I think LGBT communities are important, lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans and genderqueer communities. Something I really like to encourage through the radio training sessions we do for people who've never done radio before is exploring the topic of learning to love your voice, because people's cringe factor initially often with radio is, oh, I hate the sound of my voice on recordings, or the microphone's quite daunting. And I was one of them at first. It took a bit of getting used to, because I think our society teaches us to, you know, have this self-doubt or to critique ourselves so much. And in particularly for trans people, for people with atypical speech patterns and disabilities, for people with different accents that are not in the mainstream here, your voice has often been something that's made you feel self-conscious. So I love the idea of using radio as a place to get people together and overcome that and learn to love your voice.
Yeah, you find superb yourself in the process.
Superb that. Yeah.
Kate, we're going to finish off because time goes so quickly with these conversations, and we've got to move on to the next one in a few minutes, and we've got to have a comfort break in between. So just kind of last wrap up from everybody really in terms of Kate, how would you like to see models of public engagement change? You know, what does Agile Rabbit offer? What does community radio, community media offer to kind of really refresh public engagement?
Yeah, sure. I just want to quickly tag on to the theme of making people feel comfortable. And I think what community radio, producing these shows as part of Futures on Air at the end of last year, I think what's great about it was it showed that researchers, they don't have to have all the answers. I think researchers and academics are hesitant about getting involved in public engagement events because they are nervous and they feel that they're meant to know everything. Whereas community radio, what's brilliant about it is you're getting a group of people from different backgrounds that are interested in a certain topic, and you start talking about that topic and exploring it. And then researchers realize, oh, I'm not in the hot seat here. And you know, you can hear the excitement in their voice from learning of these local knowledges. And so I think it's getting rid of that hierarchy and showing how public engagement can be really fun and an enjoyable experience, which can, you know, link into their research. You know, researchers study something because they enjoy it, they're passionate about it. And then doing community radio, they realize that other people are passionate as well. And it can be very, like a real wholesome experience.
Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time, and I could talk about this for another couple of hours. In fact, I probably will be doing for another couple of hours, but with different people. And we can follow this up with a podcast and go into some of this in much more detail in the coming weeks. I've posted links onto the blog post for this, and I'll sort them out in a bit more of an order in the coming days. So if there's any follow-up that you want other people to look at, just send us a link and I'll add them to it. Thank you very much for taking part in this conversation. It's very engaging. Always a difficult one to get the first slot after lunch. They always say that, don't they? Don't have an interview after lunch. But this has really woken me up. It's been great. So it's thank you very much to Kate Baker, Vanessa Boone and Premal. Bat, is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes, I've got it right. I thought I had. And stay safe. Have a great rest of your weekend. And we'll catch up soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Decentre podcast. I'm Rob Watson. If you want to find out more information, contact me on Decentred Media via Twitter or go to decentred.co.uk.